Hi, I'm Vanessa Bayer, and this is my brother, Jonah.
We're two siblings who love to talk about our childhood and nostalgia and how it shaped us into the people we are today.
We're extremely tough, if I do say so myself.
Welcome to How Did We Get Weird?
So, Jonah, I was thinking about when we were in high school, and you, I guess, needed to take a gym credit. And the only gym class you could get into was body fitness with Miss Pignatella. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I was in, I can't remember what grade this is, but I was old. I mean, old for high school. I was in probably 11th or 12th grade.
Yeah, you were in 11th or 12th grade for sure.
And I had to take gym. Something happened. I was in gym. I got out of it. I wanted to take this weight training class. I wanted to take a weight training class, I don't know. But, you know, I was listening to a lot of aggressive music. Maybe I felt like,
wanted to bulk
up a little. For some reason, this class was full. I couldn't get back into gym, so I had to take this class, body fitness, which was me. And I feel like we're like a bunch of eighth grade girls because our high school started in
eighth grade.
Yeah,
you were definitely in it with my best friend, Gwen. I think we were probably in ninth grade, maybe.
Okay, but maybe eighth and ninth grade. And there was only one other guy in the class. And I remember we had to do Buns of Steel videos and step aerobics. Those were like the two things we had to do. And I remember, Mrs. Pignatella would kind of like force us to participate. I'd be like, can I just like go in the back and like kind of mess around on this like machine? And she would be like, no. And I remember going to the principal and being like, I'm like a 17-year-old guy who like loves Rancid. And like, I have to do Buns of Steel videos with like these like 15-year-old girls. Like, to me, it felt so unfair. And I remember the principal just being like, well, I don't know. She said, yeah, there's not much I can do. And I just did it the whole semester.
Right. I do remember like I definitely was like a lot of girls in my grade who were in it with you. And I remember particularly Gwen, but other people too, being like, I saw your brother today. And
I remember, because it's such a big difference when you're, because I think there were probably like eighth graders. And if I was like 17, there's like 14-year-old girls like being like, hey. And like, I remember my friends being like, how do you know these people? And I was like, oh, they're in my, they're my step aerobics class that I do every day.
Yeah, totally. Totally. That was Miss Pignatella. She was kind of a pretty tough gym teacher. And I remember she was very no nonsense. And I have this memory that mom told us, I remember that our mom was at the parent-teacher conferences, and it was, I must have been in eighth grade, because I think eighth grade was the year that we had to do swimming at school. And like, it was so annoying because you'd have to like literally like go swimming at school, and then you'd be like, your hair would be wet and you'd have to like shower there. It was like such a pain to like have to do. Whereas like regular gym class, you like barely sweat and you just like get back into your regular clothes. It's fine. Whatever. So anyways, I remember mom said that she was at the parent-teacher conferences, and she said to Miss Pignatello, because this is how mom is, she was like, Vanessa is loving your class so much. She's having the best time. And she said that Miss Pignatella was like, really? Because most of the kids hate swimming. And then mom had to just be like, yeah, Vanessa, she loves it. She loves to swim.
Yeah.
It's really fun for her.
I had swimming first period and it was the worst. It was like my hair was messed up. You're like rushing to shower and get out of there and get to class. And
yeah. I think I had it first period too. And it was just like the bell ringing for your next class. Yeah. You're still like getting out of the shower. It was so annoying. I hated it so much. And I understand them wanting us to know how to swim or like be good. But it's just like, guys,
to me, I don't understand it. It doesn't seem like that's something you learn in high school. That doesn't seem like an academic skill that you should be forced to do.
Well, the other thing that they did was in other schools, I remember they would, if you did after school sports, they would let you get out of gym class because that was like your version of gym class. But they didn't allow that at our school. So I remember even my friends like Gwen, who were in like on the swim team, had to still take swimming at school.
Weird.
So, you know, the universe isn't fair, but we got to keep trudging.
Got to keep trudging. And speaking of trudging,
in a positive
way, today's guest is from Hawaii. So I'd be very curious to hear about his swimming experiences in high school. Today, our guest is an actor, comedian, and writer. Stars as Jonah Heston, most recent primary host of Mystery Science Theater 3000, former host of the Nerdist podcast. Let's give it up for Jonah Ray Rodriguez.
Hello.
Jonah, how's it going?
It's good. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
All right. Got the cat out of here. Thank you. My wife got my text. I always have a chorus of many cats to sing me and mew me to anytime I'm introduced on a podcast, but only one showed up today and amazing. She was off key. it's funny. The gym is probably PE. We didn't call it gym. We called it PE. Physical education. Yeah. And it was terrible for me. I hated it so much. I was a real big kid. And I remember when I got to the point of having to, like when it became like shirts and skins, it was all boys school. So it was like, play basketball, shirts and skins. And I was so ashamed of my body. I would just like try to like take part, like I would take one of my arms out of my shirt, or so much of my time in school in this time in middle school and high school, like was like spent like, how do I hide my boy boobs? Like it was always like, the uniform was a polo shirt. So it wasn't very forgiving in that sense. And so I would always like think, how do I hold my backpack? So it's like, I would do one strap, but I would have one arm across and the other kind of holding it. So it looked natural and it would hide. And I remember I got to a point where I asked my dad, I was like in so much anxiety just every day going to PE. He talked to the coach and said, could you just make my son a shirt every time? and I remember like one time, like he was like just going down the line, we all lined up and he was like, shirt, skin, shirt, skin, shirt. And then like I saw like he realized he had started in the wrong, like I was in the wrong spot. And then he was just like, shirts. And then the rest of you, shirts. And he had to like, so he did two shirts in a row. No one noticed, I don't think. But it was definitely a source of shame for a long time. The other thing too was I remember every time we had to run the mile, like four laps around the track. And I would not force myself to try and get any certain time. But if you got over, I think 10 minutes or something like that, you failed. And wow. So the only thing that kept me at a decent clip was singing to myself the Proclaimers 5,000 miles.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or 500 miles. Like, so I would just be like this, big white kid just kind of like, I will 500 miles the whole time around. But then I'd say, I wanted to get out of gym. And then I went into band, which I thought was great because they just gave me, the cymbals. It was super easy. I didn't have much to do. And then the next year they tried to make us do marching band. And I remember them going like, all right, after school, we're going to like practice. I was like, after school, this is a class. What are you talking about? And then I remember this Friday, we have a game Friday night, at the stadium. And I was just like, wait, no, I can't do that. And they're like, this is part of being a band. I was like, I'm in an actual band. We have a show in Chinatown. I can't stick around for your dork fest. I'm going to go to a football game. I got punk to play. But no school I ever went to ever had a pool, so I never really had that. But it was Hawaii, so it was humid, so my hair was always messed up anyway.
Wow! And how did you end up doing the marching band stuff after school, or did you just?
Oh man! So I bailed out of that one too, and I couldn't go back to PE because I just didn't want to do that. And then so I went to ROTC for like a semester.
Wow.
And that was like, and then I remember I had to take a whole Saturday to do some parade and I hated it. I was already a punk kid. So even anything to do with the military, I was already just like, I was like, this feels wrong, wasn't learning any good skills. They would also make you once a week put on your your casuals or whatever. Like, so I would have to like be in like an ROTC outfit once a week at school. I hated that.
Wow.
Finally, I was able to go to a public school. It's after like, after my grandfather died, my dad was a psychic. So it's like, he was the only reason you were going to a Catholic all boys school. Do you want to? So I was able to go to like a public school in my neighborhood where it was just like PE was a guy that didn't look like he did any physical activity running the class. He would, he was also the guy who sold snacks during, first break. And I remember just everyone just like, wandered around a field. That was usually what PE was at Kalaheo High School when I was growing up. And so like I was able to like go to just such a terrible school that it didn't really matter if I did anything during PE.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like marching band is weird though too, because it's like you're gonna play this instrument and then you gotta like walk around. I never did anything like that. I was more kind of like you, more like in punk bands, just playing power chords. But it is weird to have to do an instrument and then have to like do exercise at the same time.
Yeah, I was not. That's not why. It's like, and plus, like being a drummer, I was like clearly I picked the one thing you were allowed to sit down during.
Exactly. You know?
It's like, give me a seat. I'm good. I'm in a corner. Perfect. Good for my anxiety. I love it. I get to be loud, but I don't have to talk. It's perfect for like a kid that doesn't realize he wants to perform yet. And just, he's like, notice me, but don't notice me because I'm sitting behind the cymbals.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand why anyone would want to, but it all really just like in Hawaii, it's like, it's not like a lot of, places in America, obviously, but like just the idea of like the football teams are kind of like, it's like no one cares, no one cares about anything.
That was a little bit like our school because I guess the guys who played football cared about it, but it was like, we didn't have a great football team. I think the football games, it wasn't like a Friday Night Lights situation where like someone's going to go to.
There weren't a lot of scouts there.
There weren't a lot of scouts there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in Hawaii though, like, at the all boys school, there was definitely like a good amount of like that was a very kind of football school because it was all boys and because it's like they can get students or anywhere. So it was like, all the big football players in my school were, like Samoan guys, and they were my bullies too. So it's like, and I was like a big guy, I was like 6'3" when I was like 15.
Wow.
And, I was probably close to 300 pounds. And they would always get mad at me when I didn't want to play football. And they called me big for nothing. and there's like a purpose to being big. And some of these guys, they're all great football players. And their names were, Tupu, Toa, Tui, and Tony Tata. They were like the four guys that kind of like,
Wow.
Mess with me the most. And Tony Tata went on to play, I think, for the 49ers for a little bit.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so it's one of those things where it's like, I remember even like the idea of anything dealing with school, especially like, and that's like a thing, I'm sure we'll come up with the three of us a bunch, but like when you get into like any kind of punk scene, you kind of just immediately go, you look at school and you're just like, this is kid stuff. I just was at like an underground show in like, in downtown. And a dude, got like punched in the face. And then like, it's like, I'm hanging out with all these guys in their 20s and they're telling me about Mumia Abu-Jamal and we're doing stuff for Food Not Bombs. And then,
You got the AK press there.
Yeah, you got the AK press there. You got like all the, you're going to the Krishna temple for free meal on a, on a Sunday afternoon. And then you go back to school on a Monday morning and everyone's just like, we got so wasted at Derek's the other night. And you're like, what are you, kids?
Yeah. Joni, you probably especially felt that way having to go back and do Buns of Steel.
I did. Yeah. I mean, no, totally. I literally was like playing in like Misfits cover bands and then having to do Buns of Steel the next day. And it was tough. And Joni, I'm curious, like, because we're sort of around the same age, like at my school, there was like my one friend, Dan, who was into punk. Like he wore like a Dead Kennedys shirt to school one day. So we became friends. And then there were kids from other schools, a couple here and there we were friends with. But like there weren't a lot of kids into it. I mean, was it like that for you as well during that time?
Yeah, well, kind of. It's the thing about Hawaii is it's already kind of a counterculture place. So, it's funny talking to people from like, a buddy of mine, Ed from Nebraska, grew up in Nebraska. And like to him, like, Fat Records bands like NOFX and Pennywise and like, it's like that kind of stuff was like, that was super subversive and like wild to listen to, super underground. But in Hawaii, those were super popular bands. And the kids that I considered, for lack of a better term, like jocks, like, the surfer kids, the kids that were popular, good looking, had money, they listened to that stuff. And so, so there was kids that listened to punk. You would see kids with punk shirts and whatnot, but it wasn't like, but we had to like dig down further because they weren't really punks. They just liked, the music and it almost forced all of me and my friends to get into like weirder and noisier stuff just to somehow like, dig deep and, feel like we were the downtrodden in some way. But it was I remember running into like one kid in my neighborhood at a punk show on the other side of the island. And I was like, you like this stuff? And like, we just got so excited that there was someone in our little neighborhood that liked it. It wasn't too common whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, guess everyone, and it's also the thing about Hawaii. It's like, no one really cares.
Now, are you originally from LA and you moved to Hawaii or no?
No, I was born and raised there. My dad was born and raised there. His dad and then his dad. And my grandmother's side as well. My family's, I'm like, I think it was the fourth or fifth generation born. First wave of Portuguese immigrants from the Azores to work on the plantations and stuff like that.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it's like, I just, and it's so weird. That's like, and that's like to like what, like Jonah was saying earlier, it's like, oh, do you want to, you know, me to say your last name? And I felt like when I first started doing stand-up, I would try to talk about being from Hawaii, and if people get confused, I would try to get brought up as Jonah Rodriguez. But like people would just like literally a couple of people said Jonah Rodriguez. And then I felt after me going up on stage, I would have to overly explain and clarify why a guy that looks like this is, you know, has that name. And so just my middle name was Ray, and it was like my dad's middle name and my grandfather's middle name. So I just kind of started doing that. So it's something that I'm used to like explaining overly, obviously.
Yeah.
Not a ton of Jonas either. I feel like our age, popular name now, but I feel like late, you know, 30s, 40s, not as many.
There was one kid I remember, and he was considered the cooler Jonah, which was always, I went to this one school, it was like in second grade, and like they called him Jonah, but they called me Jonah R. Like they wouldn't even, his name was Jonah Jenkins. And like, and I was like, and then I moved schools, and I was like, so glad to not be near another Jonah. Cause like Jonah, it does feel, you're like not a lot of Jonas. It feels pretty cool. Yeah. Name. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I went to this other school. Then like in sixth or seventh grade, he came to this other school I was going to.
Oh man, that's your place.
And that's my place. And he did like an impression of Beavis, which in my opinion was terrible, but everyone loved it. And then like the same thing happened. Everyone just started calling him Jonah, and everyone started calling me Jonah R again. And I was just like, what is happening?
Yeah, not cool.
So that's why I was super upset when I living out in LA and then meeting Jonah Hill and being like, what the fuck do I got to do?
Jonah Hill once told me that I was a cool Jonah.
Really?
Yeah. Not to brag, Jonah.
Oh, no. I mean, you know, we have a very funny thing about one time my wife and I, Deanna, were in a JFK airport in a long line for security. And then we're just tired and hungover waiting to go back to LA. And then I hear Jonah. And I look and it's Jonah Hill. And he's, you know, doing the thing where he gets bypassed. Through security, he's like, this Jonah gets to go around security. And I was like, yeah, right on. Very funny joke. Very funny.
Yeah.
You know, I did resent the name for a long time, the name Jonah, just because, one, it sounded super white. And that's like something I did, like, was, you know, didn't want to see more of when I was growing up. And the other thing was I was a big kid. And so, you know, the story of Jonah and the whale can swiftly become Jonah the
interesting,
whale.
Interesting. Got it.
Also, it rhymes with Bona. So when, you know, people like when there's that, you know, that adolescent thing of like, you know, young boys like going like, you got a boner. Like that was like a, you know, an assault. You could, you know, an insult you can sling at another kid. I was like, you saw a girl, you got a boner. You're like, no, I didn't. I hate girls. Like, you know, this like weird, you know, right. pre-testosterone masculinity, you know, kind of thing. I always kind of just resented the name so much for a long time.
Well, it also can feel sort of like religious, like Abraham or something, you know, which I always kind of struggle with because I'm, you know, not religious, but it does can feel like because of the the Old Testament, New Testament.
Yeah, no, it's Old Testament. Yeah.
Old Testament, yeah.
And it's very much like it's like, you know, a lot of people thought, you know, like would assume I was Jewish just because of the name.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. And I also believe there's a Canadian Screamo act named Jonah from the 90s. Have you ever?
Yeah. And then there's Jonah's one line drawing. What's that
Jonah Matranga, who we did a podcast with once.
Oh, right. Yeah.
We did a Jonah radio episode at Jonah's
place. Jonah's episode. That's right.
Yeah. And we called Jonah. I had just talked to him recently. He wrote a book a few years ago. That's interesting. But yeah, so there's not a lot of us. There's a
no,
especially
Jonah Bobo. He was in Zathura, I think.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And Jonah's also kind of like an unlucky name. If you research, I think it's Anne of Green Gables or Anne with the E, I can't remember which book, but there's a term that this it might've been coined in that, but it's called a Jonah day. And if you research that, Fatty Arbuckle had a movie called Fatty's Jonah Day. I think another old silent star had something called Blank's Jonah Day. So a Jonah Day is when like you're not on your game and you're really dumb and nothing's going right. It's kind of a cursed name in that way. Even biblically, it's a cursed name.
Well, I would say that you both have proven that that's just not the case anymore. I'd say a Jonah day is a pretty great day. And on that note, we'll be right back with Jonah Rodriguez and the other Jonah.
And we're back. So Jonah, we asked you to come in with a topic today, And your topic was video rental stores, which is something me and Vanessa are really excited to talk about. And just curious sort of how those resonate with you and why you wanted to talk about that today.
I was obsessed. I always wanted to work at a video rental store growing up. And the thing, I guess, they're on my mind because I do, like, I live near South Pasadena. And so there's a great video rental store there called Videotech, right on Mission Street. And it's a delightful, amazing place that has some records. It's very artsy, where they'll have, it's, you know, they'll have by director sections or weird, you know, gonzo cinema, punk cinema, like all these kind of weird things. There's something different about going inside a video store and physically seeing the stuff. And I'm not talking about, like, you know, the sound quality or the visual quality of anything. I'm talking about the ritual and the activity of going somewhere, not knowing what you're going to find. And being able to just kind of physically grab it and look at the back, it's a bit more, you know, and you can't be there all night. So you have to make that decision. And that's what's kind of very fun about it. You can, because a lot of people, you know, they can scroll through all the options of streaming. Is, you know, that's what I do more than watch anything, is just put everything on my list and then don't watch it.
Yeah, it's nice to, like, that's true. When we would go to those video stores, which at the time had VHS tapes, I don't know what they have today, but like, you did have to make a decision, and then that was the thing you were watching. You couldn't really change your mind halfway through because you didn't have anything else. So it was like, this is it.
I'm going to guess they're DVDs now.
They're DVDs, like, some, you know, and Blu-rays and whatnot. But it's like, you know, it's been on my mind too, because Ryan Turek, who's a creative producer over at Blumhouse, you know, the horror movie company, and him and some of his friends and his wife, they do an amazing pop-up the past few years called Slashback Video, where it's in the back of this, you know, the Bearded Ladies Mystic Museum, which is kind of a little tchotchke shop where you can get, you know, crystals and skulls and, you know, candles and stuff like that, kind of gothy stuff. But then they have like an art gallery in the back. And what Ryan and his friends did was make Slashback Video. So you walk in and it's like kind of this, you know, late 80s, early 90s video store where everything is a horror movie. But they have, like, it's like all the tapes are like old horror movies. They have all the standees, all the mobiles, like they have, like, you know, like, it's like you go in and you're just immersed in it. And it feels kind of silly to explain, but once you're there, you kind of go, you know, you grab your chest and you're like, oh, this feels nice.
Yeah. I mean, I would hate it because I hate horror movies, but
you'd
I can
be surprised
see
because
how...
you would have that nostalgia of like walking by the horror section and you'd be like, I remember the Ghoulies you know, VHS cover, not wanting to watch that.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I didn't mean to. I was kind of joking, but I also would be really freaked out. But also another thing I remember, and I've seen little kids do this at video stores, and I remember I used to do it, is like there's all this... This is a really specific thing, but there's all this writing, you know, on the covers of the different movies, of the saying like what they are and what they're whatever. And the backs like would say what the movie is about. And when I was a little kid, I used to walk around and pick up the different like VHS like covers and pretend to read them, but I didn't know how to read yet.
Yeah.
So it's like a really great way of like performatively like pretending, you know, how to read, because there's other people walking around and I just sort of like look at the covers and be like, But like I didn't know it. And I remember like being like a teenager and seeing a little kid doing that there and being like, this is so cute.
Because he's just mimicking everyone, just like picking it up.
Yeah, people
looking
can
at
watch
it,
you.
Nodding their head.
Because you don't know what anything says. You just know that there's pictures of people on the covers or whatever the pictures are.
Yeah. And then a couple more smaller pictures on the back.
Yeah. But then I also remember they would always play, the Starflix is the one that Jonah and I used to go to. And I remember they would always have a movie playing. And depending on what that movie was, I remember sometimes that would be kind of scary. If it was kind of a scary movie and it would be on, I remember like going through the store and trying to kind of like not watch it or whatever it was.
Yeah. It was just such a ritual for so long for I think so many people, you know, Friday getting, you know, ordering Domino's or getting a DiGiorno or something, you know, and then watching a couple movies. And then, you know, I was always like, my mom was always just like, she's like, okay, this time don't take as long. Just make a decision.
Yeah. We would always take such a long time. And the other thing I remember is, well, there's two things. One is, they would give you this big bag of popcorn when you would leave. Like it came with the movie, which was really cool. Flick specifically. And then the other thing that Jonah, I don't know if you remember this, and maybe we've talked about this on here before, but there would always be from the studio or whatever, would send these video rental places, like these big cardboard standing posters for the movie. So I remember like there was one for Turner and Hooch that had like Tom Hanks, right? And like this big dog. And then what the like rumor
that was Hooch. Just in case you don't remember.
Got it. Yeah, that was Hooch. And he was Turner. Okay, got it. But so the rumor was like if you signed the back of the cardboard cutout poster and put your phone number, they would like give you the poster when they were done with it.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if it ever worked, but I remember seeing
Yeah, I put my name on one for Steven Seagal's Hard to Kill classic. And I remember it was huge. I remember being like, oh my God, I can't. I'm so lucky I'm going to get this. I can't remember if it was there or someone else. And it never showed up. And I thought about it for years.
Like,
I think I've even looked at them as an adult. Like, maybe I should buy this because
just
like,
to
I
fulfill
felt like,
whatever you felt was missing. Yeah. Something's been missing.
Yeah, because it was like
Hard to Kill, Standy.
Oh my gosh. And that was a movie that I watched so much growing up. I had a huge Steven Seagal. Kick. I don't know if you did, Joan, if that was
I just like, how could you not? You just watched them all the time. Him, Chuck Norris, like it's like, you know, anything that would just like, you know, kicks and guns is the genre.
Yeah, Jonah was so into Steven Seagal, and I remember she's around a lot. I feel like she does a lot of comedy stuff now and stuff, but I remember one time when Jonah and my parents came to an SNL after party, Gina Gershon was there. And I remember like Jonah and my dad were like so freaked out because she was in...
She's in Above the Law, which I believe is his first movie.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. And I remember like seeing you, Jonah, be kind of like, what it, like probably was so crazy.
I think dad might have mentioned something to her about it.
I'm sure he did. So. Dad's, I think he did. You know,
she was stoked. I'm sure a lot of dads over time have mentioned Gina Gershon.
I'm sure it's her appearance. Her favorite role in her like very long, like very respectable career.
Yeah, I definitely heard from a lot of dads about that. But like, it is so funny to like thinking about Jonah, how like you progressed and became so into like punk and all this stuff. But that like, when you were little, you're just like so into Steven Seagal and Above the Law and stuff.
Well, I mean, I wonder if it's a thing of just, you know, like you were mentioning before, like aggression, you know, it's, there's something like, it's like these movies are aggressive and you feel aggressive and like, and then that music definitely lends itself to, you know, and then I always consider, you know, like a mosh pit, which is like a silly thing to talk about or rap poetically about, but I really truly, love them because like when they're in their best form, it's like, it's safe violence. You know, it's like this aggression where everyone's kind of moving in concert and leaning into each other, and then someone falls, someone picks them up. You know, it's like it's this thing where I mean, I think for you know sensitive boys like Jonah and I, it's like this kind of like this thing where you can kind of just like let go. And these movies kind of did that for I think a lot of guys.
And I've like never been in a fight in my life, and I'm not a big guy.
I've been like punched here and there and slapped, but I've never like, you know, gone for it. And like gotten into a fight.
But it is like, that is you're totally right. I never thought about it, but these movies and the music, it can be this kind of vicarious way of kind of like experiencing that without like putting yourself in any actual danger.
Yeah. I mean, even just like feeling like in playing hard music, it's, you know, like when you're done with a set, it feels like you got into a fight.
That's true. Although I will say that I thought about like shows I went to as a teenager that were so violent in retrospect and how I wasn't scared at all. Like I was just standing there and like they, you know, like I'd go see, I don't know, like, like Napalm Death or something. You have to stop the set like six times, the Mills in Boston because of fights. And I wasn't scared at all. And I was right up there. And now I feel like I go to a show and like, there's like a guy with his shirt off and I'm like, okay, I got to get like 30 feet away from this person. You know what I mean? Like, it's strange how as you get older, you're just so much more aware of like the danger.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember I was doing a show years ago. It was like a stand-up set and some guy showed in the Foundation Room at the House of Blues. And then like afterwards, the guy was running the show. He's like, hey, there's like some like, kind of thrash bands playing in the main room. You want to go watch? And I think it was like me, Kyle Kinane. I'm trying to remember who else was there. But like, it's like I'm Chris Fairbanks. And we're watching from the balcony. And I'm just like, had enough drinks. Guy kept on getting us beers. And I'm just like, you know what? I haven't been in a pit in so long. I'm just going to go in there real quick, just for old time's sake. I go down there and it's like, you know, these like kind of like crazy what's up rockers, like just these like, you know, like East LA Hesher guys going, you know, nuts in the pit. And I was just kind of like, I was like, well, I'm already down here. Let's try it. And I get in, I take like two steps. I don't know. My ankle hurt all of a sudden. And then I just remember going like, I was like, oh, geez. And I fell. And then a bunch of guys tripped over me. And then I limped back up. And like, and I remember like Kyle Goins is like, he's like, you don't do it, man. You just don't do it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't do it anymore.
But it was like this, that need, that nostalgic need to just kind of get in there and
for sure
and relive that. It's like, and it's so odd to think that, like, and I'm sure this comes up on your show a lot of this, this, you know, this need to kind of like go back to that pocket, which it's like, I didn't feel safe or comfortable much of the time growing up, like in the areas that like the music I go back to a lot, the movies I watched from when I was like, you know, 12, that was like probably the most anxious, you know, unsettling, scariest time of my life. And yet, I think that might be for a lot of people. That's why I'm always so interested in the idea of people that like us who love like nostalgia, but also kind of like, why do we want to go back there?
Right. That's really true.
Invariably, it's all probably way better for us right now than it ever was going to be back then.
I watched that Blockbuster documentary, Jonah. Did you see that?
Yeah, I started watching it. I didn't like the way they treated Roger Corman in that. Like they kind of like shit on Roger Corman, who's like done so much for cinema, you know, for, you know, a very long time. And they're like, it's like, this guy makes dumb movies, or, you know, or
right.
Lloyd Kaufman is, yeah, like Lloyd Kaufman was the one they were kind of. But anyway, I haven't. That's my review of it. I didn't mean to, but I saw it. Yeah.
I just feel like, you know, what you're saying is so true, because it's like, I feel like this Blockbuster has been like so idealized as being like, and it's like, yeah, Blockbuster like kind of sucked. Like Blockbuster actually, it's like put all these cool video stores out of business, like with like this like kind of weird corporate structure they had. Like we shouldn't idealize them. We should idealize, you know, Video Joes.
I mean, that's why it was so hard for me to be upset when, you know, people thought Amoeba in Los Angeles was going to close, because I know I was working at a small mom and pop record store in Venice Beach. And when Amoeba opened up, they offered more money for used stuff. And so people started taking all their used stuff there. They, you know, they just had all their, all the inventory from their stores in the Bay Area near San Francisco and Berkeley. And our store just like our sales went down, like, you know, Aaron's Records, their sales went down, Footprints or Fingerprints in like, it's like all these stores just went away. Because of like this big store just like moving into town. And I mean, they are an independent store. It's not like they're a global chain or even a national chain, but it was just like, and we're going like, oh, I'm going to miss it so much. I was like, yeah, take it.
Yeah.
It's just like this, they ruined the small business model. Had to be a superstore.
I worked at a record store in high school and we went out of business. And, or I don't know if we went out of business, but I don't know if I talked about this on the podcast. It turned out that both of my managers were stealing from the store and I didn't know. Man. And it was a situation where it was a used CD store and used and new. And you, if you wanted to take anything home, you just had to write it down on a piece of paper, which seems like not that official. And I found out both my managers were taking CDs, throwing them in the garbage, and then coming after work and picking them up. And I remember going back. You did that?
Well, yeah, I did that at like a bigger store in Hawaii I was working at. Where I would just like, you know, I was like, I want that Rocket from the Crypt CD, and I put it aside. I put some, you know, videos in a trash bag, and I'm walking through the door with all the trash bags. The alarm goes off, the security alarm. I go, oh, look at me, I'm stealing stuff. Put it by the trash can, and then pick it up on the way home.
Yeah, people, that was the era people did that.
Jonah, and, what record store was this, if you don't mind saying?
Well, the one I did that at was called, that was called Jelly's. It was in Hawaii. It's no longer there.
And other Jonah, what record store were you at?
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
No, it was bound to happen.
There were many locations of this. I don't think there are any more. It was called the Record Exchange.
Oh, yeah. There were a few of them. Okay. But yeah, no, it's interesting what you guys are saying about, I mean,
even
more so.
Give my managers full names and social security numbers.
Yeah, I'd like to kind of get those guys to pay for what they've done right now.
I do remember, you know what I do remember though? I was probably in my early 20s when I had this job. And I remember finding out that one of my bosses was younger than me and instantly being like, I don't have to listen to this guy. Like totally losing all respect for him. And he was probably like 19 and I was like 21. But at that age, I'm just like, yeah, you're 19. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, you do it.
Well, it's interesting what you guys are saying about, I do think that Blockbuster is looked back on as such a like, you know, it's so sad that it's gone, but you're right. It, you know, we had the same exact thing happen in our town where we had this place Flicks, which was where everybody did their video rentals from. And then a Blockbuster moved in like truly like so close. I mean, pretty ballsy of that Blockbuster. I didn't even really think about that, but like the Blockbuster was so close and then
that was was the, how they rolled.
Yeah, they had a better. Yeah, right. I'm sure that's actually a really good point. I'm sure it was so by design. They had a better selection. They had like more of like the latest hits or whatever. However, I will say we always went to Flix, and I think part of it was the free popcorn. Blockbuster was not about to start giving out these. They would give us huge bags of popcorn at Flix. I mean, it was like a huge. It was like a big, like almost like a duffel bag.
Oh yeah, popcorn. Like a big, like end of the night at a movie theater.
So it was like, dare you, Blockbuster, you hacks, to give us those. Anyways, I know people are sensitive about Blockbuster. I don't mean to completely burn it to the ground, but let's just give some respect to those smaller mom and pop shops.
Yeah.
And there is one Blockbuster left.
Yes.
And I've been there. It's in Bend, Oregon.
You went to it? I saw the documentary. Yeah, I guess I was in the documentary. What was that like for you, Jonah? What was the experience like for you?
You know, it was odd. I mean, like, it's like I had a show in Bend and I was just kind of on the road by myself. And I like got into town, went, and I felt compelled to get a shirt. It was just odd because it's like, it's like that same thing I was telling you about that Slashback video art installation. It's like you go in and it's, you know, it puts you back to, like, I was going to say, you know, like a nicer time, but like at the same time, I'm realizing it's like, what?
Stressful.
I mean, maybe
time.
It's like the idea of it is like, because we were so stressed or like anxious or whatever, you know, we're all artist types. So it's like, most likely we kind of had those feelings as kids, but maybe going to a video store, maybe that's the thing. It's like, those were our little vacations from thinking about like our, you know, like everything all at once. Being able to just go and, you know, there's the nostalgia thing.
Yes. I think that's a really good way to kind of wrap this up is like, instead of us like shitting on the corporate, which is, you know, totally valid. I do think it was like, you get this movie, you don't have your phone, you don't have like 900 distractions, you got your pizza, you got the movie, and like, that's a total escape from whatever's happening at school.
Yeah. I think that's so nice. All right. Well, we're going to take another quick break, but we will be right back with the Jonas. And we're back. Okay, so Jonah, now we're going to play a game where we basically bring up nostalgic products, shows, etc., that are making a comeback. And if you're into them, you can give them a yes-stalgia.
Yes-stalgia.
And if you're not into them, you can give them a no-stalgia.
No-stalgia.
So are you ready to play this really cool game?
Yes, I'm ready now.
Okay, great.
All right.
So Jonah, do you want to introduce the first thing that's making a comeback?
Sure. So really interested in hearing your take on this one, Jonah. The Henson Company is going to sell Labyrinth NFTs. The Jim Henson Company is launching its first ever NFT digital collectibles in partnership with some company based on the fantasy film from 1986, celebrating its 35th anniversary. They'll be released in 2022. After the initial drop, fans will be able to purchase 3D digital collectibles inspired by the film exclusively through the Vivi app, available to download at the App Store and Google Play. Jonah, what do you think? Yes-stalgia, no-stalgia on the...
No-stalgia. I mean, I'm feeling old, like with the NFTs and, you know, and the cryptocurrency stuff, but it just doesn't... I know there's like the idea, like my friend Felicia today was trying to explain it to me. She's like, no, but then you always have a stake in it. If someone uses it, you can get paid for it. And I'm all for, you know, a version of artists getting paid as much as, you know, they can. But what is it? And like, I already feel weird when I just buy like a print from an artist or of an art, a thing I like.
Right.
Like, it's like, this is like one step beyond that. It's like, it's not a painting. It's not, there's no human touch to it. I mean, sure, someone did it and clicked around and made the design, but like, but what is it? And are frames just going to be video screens in houses, you know, in museums?
Yeah. Good point. I think all valid.
Yeah.
Nostalgia. Yeah.
That's a nostalgia. Vanessa, what about you?
Well, look. As you know, as you may not know, Jonah and I are pretty big into the crypto world. I wouldn't say that we're super knowledgeable about it, but we both really enjoy kind of playing around in that world. And look, if anyone wants to message us and tell us how to turn this podcast into an NFT, we're open to it. But the point is, I think that
listen, I'm all about making money. And if I understood money at all, you know.
Yes. And the only way, interesting to say on a podcast, the only way I've ever been able to even start to understand NFTs is through podcasts. Like, I've just listened to a lot of podcasts about them. But I guess I will say something that I do like about it is, you know, The Labyrinth is clearly like a classic movie. People love it. It's very, you know, what I the fact that they're making an NFT digital collection related to it sort of is like, in some ways, it's really nice to hear because it's like the Jim Henson Company is, they're staying relevant. You know, they're like, we've got all this great stuff. And, you know, I guess I prefer it to them like saying like they're coming out with a new Labyrinth, which I bet if I look that up right now, it would be true. But like the point is like
Harry Styles would be the Goblin King this time. Yeah,
he'd actually be really good. But the point is like, I feel like it's like good for them a little bit. Like they're figuring this stuff out. They clearly have people working there now who understand this stuff. And I just do think if it's another way, you know, that movie is from 1986. And if it's another way for people to sort of get invested in that film and keep the Jim Henson Company thriving, then I'm for it. So I'm going to give it a yes-stalgia. Jonah Bayer, what about you?
Well, I completely disagree.
Okay.
I think it's like, why? Like, I feel like everyone's making NFTs now. No one really understands what they are. Uh-huh. You know, do we need this? I mean, yeah. I mean, yes, I prefer it to like the, like a remake, which, yeah, instead of David Bowie, it would probably be like, I don't know, like
Harry
Dave
Styles
Grohl or something. Harry Styles. Yeah. I mean, like,
No, Dave Grohl would be Huggle.
Okay. I don't really know the movie that well, but
Then you have no skin in the game.
Yeah, but like I don't have any skin in the game. But like I just feel like the NFT thing, it's like everyone's doing them. No one I feel like my age understands what they are, and I also feel like maybe that's what bugs me, is that I think I'm like hitting an age where I like with like NFTs and TikTok and stuff where I just like have stopped. Like I could like explain stuff to our parents, yeah. Like, oh yeah, this is what it is, and now I'm just like, yeah, I don't know.
TikTok was the last one, like where I downloaded it and looked at it for a bit, and I was just like, I think I've reached it. I think I'm done with the. And it's, you know, it's odd when you, especially when you're in entertainment, and like especially in the era that like, you know, like we all came up in, where it's like you had to have the MySpace account, like, you know, post about your gigs, post about the thing, you know, it's like
totally
that gets you more work, that gets you noticed. It's and it's like, so like, you know, especially like this, like, you know, past like 15 years, but like, I feel like I got on, like I looked at TikTok and I was like, it's time for this, you know, 39-year-old dude to just stop it here. It's like, I don't want to keep on, you know, trying to figure out the new thing.
And, Jonah, it's your mosh pit. It's your digital mosh pit.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So that's a nostalgia from me. We got the Jonas with a nostalgia and Vanessa with a yes-stalgia.
Okay, great. Now, let's move on to our next thing that's making a comeback. The Matrix. There's going to be a fourth installment of the franchise where Neo and Trinity are back for one more fight over the fate of reality itself in the second trailer. The long-awaited fourth installment of the Matrix series, which finds Neo back in his manicured life as Thomas Anderson in the simulated world of the Matrix until he's once again offered the red pill. This also stars Carrie Ann Moss. They're able to finally reunite. And there's some other really big stars along with Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss, including some names that I wasn't really expecting to see, particularly Neil Patrick Harris. The film opens in theaters and arrives on HBO Max December 22nd. I don't know what you guys think. At the end of the day, I just want to say, what do you guys think? Is this a yes or nostalgia for you? And how are you feeling? Our guest, Jonah, we will start with you.
So I don't think I've ever even seen the third Matrix movie. I remember the second one kind of was a bit of a letdown. There was cool stuff in it. But at the same time, seeing, you know, what Keanu and Alex Winter were able to do with doing a third Bill and Ted, and how, you know, a lot of the John Wick movies are very much like, you know, Keanu made those happen. I think he wouldn't come back to the Matrix, something that was so iconic and huge, lightly. I truly think it's like a lot of care was taken into like what this is going to be. I normally don't watch trailers, but I caught the trailer for this one in front of a film and was like, oh, it looks kind of like a love story. Just like, you know, which they kind of had with Carrie Ann Moss and his character over the three, but like this one feels kind of like a distilled, almost like this is going to be the Before Sunset edition of the Matrix films, you know, the second installment of The Linklater. So I'm going to say yes, nostalgia, because also Keanu.
Yeah. And also there's some other stars that I didn't mention. Priyanka Chopra Jonas, Jada Pinkett Smith. Neil Patrick Harris really stood out.
I think Neil Patrick Harris is like, he's good. He's so good at like, he could play a good agent Smith, you know, he's very,
right.
Cause he's very sharp with his performance when he wants to be. He could be very like direct and sharp with his, which is very like, you know, robotic in a way, in a very complimentary way.
Got it. Great. Jonah Bayer, what do you think?
I was just thinking about if Neil Patrick Harris was reprising his role as Doogie Howser in
this
movie. Well,
that's exactly. I could see that on your face, and I was thinking the same thing. And I think it's because I feel like we kind of miss some of the other stuff that he did. So I also still think of him as Doogie Howser, and I know nobody else does. And I'm sure he would love to hear that. But
on the train, right? Or yeah. No, Gone Girl. He's great in that.
Right. And then How I Met Your Mother, like a huge successful show.
But that is like the Gina Gershon above the law. Like, oh, the first thing you ever did.
On this podcast,
yeah.
People are their first thing.
Yeah, people are their first things.
Jonah, what do you think about this fourth installment?
I feel similar to Jonah. I like never really got super into The Matrix. I feel like there was like a certain kind of personality type that was really drawn to those movies.
Right.
First one is undeniable, though.
Yeah, so yeah.
It's kind of like an amazing movie.
I think I might have been a little too old. I don't know. Mm-hmm, I feel like mm-hmm. It was like maybe my post-Seagal, but I was like, you know, right. Watching like, you know, like Another State of Mind or something. I don't know. But
you were like, it was like Dark City did it better. They should have brought Kiefer Sutherland in on this. I'd rather watch City of the Lost Children and more Jeunot.
Yes, yeah. Right. I was very sophisticated. But yeah, I mean, I did watch the Bill and Ted reboot last year with Keanu and Alex Winter. I thought it was well done. So I agree with Jonah. I think that, you know, they're not going to rush this out like, I don't know, like one of those like 19 like Karate Kid sequels they made with like all different people. Like, I'm sure it will be well produced, well thought out. So I say sure. I mean, this is probably something I would watch, you know, if it was there.
Great.
So I'm going to say give it a yes, Dalja. Vanessa, what about you? Throwing it your way.
Yeah. You know, I can't believe I actually haven't seen the new Bill and Ted, which I'm shocked that I haven't seen it because I'm such a huge Keanu fan. You know, I love, you know, Speed, one of my favorite, probably all time. It's such a good movie.
Speed is one of your all time favorite movies, really?
Yeah, I actually think it is. It was on TV.
It's so well paced. It like,
Jonah,
it gets
you
going.
Gotta watch it as an adult. It's really good.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you'll cry when Jeff Daniels gets it.
Wow.
That's the one thing I was going to say is I wish that the Jeff Daniels, spoiler alert, if you still haven't seen Speed, then maybe, I don't know. But the Jeff Daniels death to me is
I don't remember that at
so
all.
So sad.
It's his eyes because he has those great, sad eyes that he was able to just kind of like when he notices that he's done. Oh, it's such a good.
It's so good. And the beginning, remember, they save all those people in the elevator. They're like, they save people from this elevator thing. It's so good. Anyways, I know. I don't know that I've ever actually verbalized the fact that Speed is one of my favorite movies of all time, but here it is. You're getting it here first. Because it was just on TV like a few months ago, and I like was like, man, this is so good. Also, the chemistry between Keanu and
Sandra Bullock.
And then there was this news story recently about how like Sandra Bullock said she'd never had like, no one had ever sent her like chocolate covered strawberries or something. And so Keanu like sent them to her when they were filming Speed. I don't know.
He's nonstop, like the best guy.
He's the best guy. Also, true. He still looks great. Also, guess who else is the best and still looks great? Sandra Bullock. She is like, and I know I was just blanking on her name, but it's because I kept wanting to say Sandy. And I was like, it's not Sandy, but maybe I call her that. So maybe I was actually just being, but both of them are just like so, like they're just perfect. I love both of them. They both are doing so great. So, but anyways, to go back to the Matrix fourth installment, this is wild. I did not see the first Matrix until I'm going to call it like a year ago. I watched it over the pandemic. Everybody said that I would love it so much because I'm real into like space and robots and stuff like that. And I watch all the Westworlds. Like I watch every episode of Westworld. I listen to a Westworld podcast so they can explain it to me. I still don't understand it. But I think like because of all my interest in that kind of stuff, everyone's always been like, you would love The Matrix. You would love it. And I finally saw it. I thought it was great. I'm into them bringing it back. I agree that I don't think they're going to do it in a lazy way. I think if they're bringing it back, especially it's different than if it was like coming out like as the fourth and like they were coming out every year or two. Like this is like a big deal that it's coming back and it's coming back. It's not like they've replaced Keanu with like
the guy from Speed 2.
Yeah, the guy from Speed 2. Jason. Yeah, I never saw Speed 2. Heartbreaking. But I don't blame Sandra Bullock for doing it.
Yeah, CP2, cruise control, and I think it happened on a boat.
Oh my gosh.
I remember the commercials where she comes out and she's in like a blue bikini and she's like holding drinks and the commercials for Speed 2. And I remember every time I would see it, I'd be like, it's got to be Keanu this time. It's like when I would watch Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet and I'd be like, it's got to end differently this time. I always wanted a happy ending and I always want Keanu to be in Speed 2, but guess what? You don't get that, but you get the Matrix 4, and I'm excited for it, and I'm giving it a yes-stalgia. Okay, let's move on. That's three yes-stalgias. Now, Jonah, do you want to introduce the third thing that's, quote, making a comeback?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. This is a really great one. This was sent by our producer, Olivia. So thank you for this, Olivia. And it is, once a bowling alley snack, mozzarella sticks are having a resurgence. There's an article about this, about scrolling TikTok, and there's people are loving the cheese pull, which is pulling apart a mozzarella stick.
So millennials are saving the mozzarella stick industry?
Yeah, I guess so. According to a report from DoorDash, mozzarella sticks were the most ordered game day food during the 2021 NFL season, outselling even chicken wings. It's a best-selling item at this place, Milk Drunk. This TikTok creator says they're prevalent on social media because they're both broadly familiar and a good canvas for creative experimentation. Yes. Her video of mozzarella sticks coated in Flamin' Hot Cheetos has gotten more than 1 million views. So
a lot of restaurants are like doing their own twist on mozzarella sticks. There's Crab Rangoon mozzarella sticks at this restaurant in Iowa. There's some other takes on mozzarella sticks at different restaurants. And I found this, there's this chef from Cleveland who I did a little bit of a deep dive on, he has this restaurant and he does these mozzarella sticks that are $28 because he tops them with caviar. So, and he started out in Cleveland. He started as a teenage prep cook at a high-end 80s style Italian restaurant outside of Cleveland. And I was going to try and ask our dad before we started what restaurant we think that is. I'm guessing Giovanni's, but he serves these mozzarella sticks at Carne Mare in Manhattan, this Manhattan steakhouse. And they're $28 because they have caviar on them. Jonah, I don't know that I needed to like really rush in and interrupt you to say all of that. But the point is, Jonah Rodrigues, what do you think about this resurgence of mozzarella sticks?
I'm not into it. I think cheese is good on its own. I try not to eat too much of it these days. You don't need to deep fry anything. Deep fried, it doesn't really matter what it is at that point. That's why, there's certain types of foods that doesn't really matter what's inside. It's a texture thing. You can get that anyway. I don't think people should be having fried cheese as much. That's a nostalgia for me, dog.
Got it.
I'm going to go with Jonah. I feel like if I'm going to get something fried, it's probably going to be, I made fish sticks the other day. Those are pretty good. Mm-hmm. Onion rings. I have an air fryer. So,
Yeah. And you got me one for my birthday.
I got Vanessa an air fryer.
Is it worth it for the amount of space they take up?
Let me tell you something. That's what I thought. And I think I use it like almost every day. Mm-hmm. We have a microwave and I feel like it's like better to heat it up in the air fryer and it's like, it's cooked stuff so fast and you don't really need to use oil or just a little bit. So I'm surprised how much we use it. Me and my wife use it a lot.
Vanessa, have you used yours, the gift
I
from
have.
Your brother?
I've made a lot of salmon in it. I make salmon in it a lot. I've made some cauliflower in it. I really do like it. Now, Jonah and his wife, Vicky, got me an Instant Pot like a couple of years ago. And I used that so much that I'm trying to transition and use both. And I haven't quite, I'm still more leaning on the Instant Pot, but like I'm getting into the air fryer. And
Instant Pot
really,
I use more for like, we use for more for like grains, rice, proteins and stuff. We use the Ninja for, but I want to just, because Vanessa, I think, was too scared to call out this guy, Andrew Carmelini.
Yeah.
And I'm not scared of him.
Okay, you're not scared of this Cleveland, this originally from Cleveland chef.
Yeah, yeah. Because this guy, $28 mozzarella stick with caviar, no one needs that. And
right.
It's like,
right.
Because, yeah, I mean, he has all these fancy restaurants. He's drinking wine with Robert De Niro on his website. It's like, you know what?
Oh, wow. Jonah, you've done some research on him, too.
You came from Cleveland, like a scrappy guy. You built your way up to, being a world-renowned chef. And congratulations for you, but leave mozzarella sticks to people just want a simple mozzarella stick, for $5. We don't need
this. Okay, I'm going to cross Andrew Carmelini off the list for our guests for this podcast because after you've trashed him so hard. He's a James Beard. He's gotten a Michelin star at his restaurant, but guess what?
Here's how I feel about it.
Doesn't give you the right to rip people off.
But when people do that thing,
Chris,
where it's like, you know how to make like the nicest food for the most rich people. And then you go, I'm going to do mozzarella stick. and put some caviar. And it's like, it feels almost kind of like a classist move.
It feels like condescending in a way, right? Yeah. Like, oh, I can make this like crappy thing you like, I can make it actually look good.
Yeah.
It's like, it is what it is. And if you don't like it, don't have to turn your nose up at it.
It's anytime some like fancy restaurant saying our take on something.
Yeah.
You want to just tell them to fuck off.
Yeah.
This is what drove me nuts about that Bobby Flay. I remember that Bobby Flay challenge show.
Jonah, you and I have talked about this.
I've talked about this so much. And I know probably, Jonah, you have things to do with your life right now. But there was a show.
No, I wiped away everything so I can hear you guys talk about Bobby Flay.
There was this show where it's like a challenge where it's like, Bobby Flay is going to go to this place and there's these people have been making this dish for generations and they have a restaurant and Bobby Flay is going to come in and he's going to try to make it. And then they're going to judge who's better. And it's like, who the hell does this guy think he is? He's going to go and these people have been making like this, some type of like food passed down for generations. And he's like, well, I'm going to throw the few things together and see if mine's better. It's like, how presumptuous.
Yeah. It's beat Bobby Flay. It's the whole premise of the show is like this. Yeah. This family has been making like this family recipe for like generations. And in 2 hours, he's going to like see if he can beat them at it. Yeah. And it's like, Bobby Flay, like maybe take a minute to think about it. Like, there's no winners.
People
are
like, sorry, Bobby's is better. And then like, you know, some old lady going, this is all we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like it was condescending in the same way that these mozzarella sticks are.
Andrew Carmelini is not Bobby Flay, but that's either
he
way,
would never show up on the podcast. Like, you can't say his name right.
It seems like, Jonah, this is a nostalgia for you, and now I'm going to give you my take on it, which is
what's your take?
Basically my take is the same as our producer Olivia's take, which is like, the reason that I don't give this a yes-stalgia is because I don't think that mozzarella sticks ever went away. Like, I'm not like, oh my God, like I'm anti them coming back. It's like, since when did people like move away from them? I think like, if you're a person who eats mozzarella sticks, you keep eating them. If you aren't, you aren't. We've never really been a family that ordered them at like Italian restaurants or anything, but I have friends who still, I don't know. I feel like by that logic, you could take like pretty much any food and be like, it's having a comeback. And it's like,
totally.
just because, I don't know. But I guess the thing that's happening that is new is that like these restaurants are doing their spin on it. But as we've said, it's like, I think you can kind of leave well enough alone. I feel like there's already a lot going on with like a full mozzarella stick that you don't need to. I mean, caviar on a mozzarella stick really does not sound appealing to me.
It's already salty enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it a nostalgia too, partially because I'm not into the variations on it and partially because I think they never went away.
Yeah. So, go to any bowling alley. They still got it.
Yeah.
Them.
Guess what? So, all right. Well... It's been so great having you today, Jonah. Thank you so much for being our guest. Where can people find you?
I'm at Jonah Ray on Twitter and Instagram. And speaking of nostalgia, I am the there's two seasons worth of Mystery Science Theater 3000 on Netflix, which was a very nostalgic show for me. And now we're currently wrapping up our next season, which is going to be all on its own, you know, self-distributed platform called the Gizmoplex that Joel Hodgson's come up with. So make those. And then that's where you can find me, I guess.
Incredible.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait to see that. That's going to be so great.
That's going to be so great. Well, thank you so much to Jonah Rodriguez for joining us and to everyone for listening. If you enjoyed that, please subscribe to the podcast. Keep an eye out for next week's episode of How Did We Get Weird, where we will discuss more stories from our childhood and cultural milestones like video rental stores. Thanks, Jonas.
And then we say at the same time, you're welcome.
You're welcome.
Oh, no, the Jonas singularity has begun.